Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your direction. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. If you're in the Northeast, I know you were freezing. And if you're out in the West Coast, you're probably just loving watching us freeze. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen at the bottom of the hour. Lawrence Jones is standing right by. One Nation last night. We were live. A few hours later, we're back live on Fox and Friends. So covering a lot of the same stories, of course, over Super Bowl Sunday. Lawrence, welcome.
It's good to be back.
This is your second full week. Yeah, and the eye looks good.
It's coming back, Sean. You just got to come to work, man.
Right.
I don't believe in excuses. So the moment they gave me the green light, I was back at it.
Absolutely. And the glasses look good, by the way. Nice. Before we get more on Lawrence, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
You know, a lot of times athletes are hesitant to talk about political views and how we feel about things. I feel heartbroken about what's happened in the United States I'm pretty sure you're referencing ICE and some of the protests and things like that.
Chris Lillis, a winter, I don't even know what he does, is a winter Olympian. Not happy with America, not living up to his expectations. Sports goes political from the new ungrateful American Olympian in the dueling halftime shows at an underwhelming Super Bowl. Sports is now caught up in the political scrum. We will discuss.
Number two.
If Iran doesn't think President Trump will strike, if they keep just fooling around with these negotiations and they're not serious about taking them somewhere, they have a very short memory.
True. Iran, U.S. talk, an exercise which will yield absolutely nothing. It's time the U.S. ends this evil empire, but it won't be easy. But delaying will only make it harder to win. As Netanyahu heads to the White House, he actually moved up his trip, which means a lot.
Number one.
Unfortunately, we haven't heard back from the White House or Mike Johnson or Lita Thune in terms of the demands that we've put on the table, common sense demands.
I hope
on behalf of the American people.
I hope he's not speaker, man. He is just one attack after another. 5 days until a shutdown. That's where we might just be heading unless both sides can thaw out their ICE standoff. I see an easy off-ramp to compromise, but the question is, do they? And, you know, we know about their demands, right? Some of their demands. Judicial warrants never going to happen, but body cameras have already happened. Wandering patrols, they say, wasn't taking place, but Tom Homan's not going to put up with that, Lawrence.
Well, that could be
a win for them.
That's an easy agreement, but they never know how to take the win. First of all, the body camera funding was in the Big Beautiful Bill.
Yeah.
So the rollout has been slow on that because the money needs to be activated in January. So I don't know why they're debating that. That wasn't really a sticking point. The judicial warrants are a non-starter. It's a administrative process already, even when it comes to the asylum process. They want to reinvent the law. If they want to do that, then just pass a new law. They don't have the votes for that as well. When it comes to the wandering patrols, Tom Homan is on the ground working with people saying he wants to be more targeted. But the mayor is still saying publicly he doesn't want to, you know, cooperate with ICE at all. Now, the governor has changed his tool. He realized the writing on the wall. Plus, he has a fraud investigation that he's under. But the mayor is still resisting.
But, you know, in real life, they're getting access to the prisons.
They're getting some support from the local police because Tom Homan worked his magic. He went in there and said, I'm not Republican or Democrat. You know I work with Obama. You guys have seen me before. And he's saying, listen, if you don't want us on the streets, let us get him in the jails. We'll make sure that other stuff isn't done. We'll give you notice so local cops know what's happening. And he's beginning to see it. He said it would certainly help if some of these local politicians would say what's actually happening and bring down the temperature, but look for a further downgrade in Minneapolis. But New York is fortified to fight back. They got their plans in place, already vilifying ICE.
Tom Homan is a numbers guy. He's also an agent's guy. He was on the ground. He knows all of the agents in charge and all this. So they're feeding him information. And what he did is he went to the mayor, he went to the governor and said, look, we're not going to agree on everything, but let me just show you the outline of all these faces of these criminals that you guys have. I don't want to have to release this to the American public and saying that you're trying to impede me on this. Can we at least agree to turn these people over? And if you cooperate with that, then I'll limit the amount of force that is brought here because I won't need them here.
So Bill Hagerty, the senator who was once from Tennessee, but he was once ambassador over in Japan, has got a real perspective on what's going on. And he said, look, when it comes to ICE, do you notice where it worked? It worked in Louisiana. It works in Tennessee. And it's worked in Washington, D.C. Cut 20.
They're not cooperating with authorities at the federal level, and the result is utter chaos in Minneapolis. Go to Memphis. Memphis is now becoming one of the safest cities in America because we do have cooperation at the local level, at the state level, and the federal level. We have 16 agencies at the federal level working with Memphis, and Memphis has been dramatically improved in terms of the reduction of crime on the streets and in the neighborhoods.
So, I mean, that should show you something. So what do you think, Lawrence? You think this is going to shut down?
Look, I think they feel like they have some momentum here. And I think that's part of why the Super Bowl halftime performance was about that. The left feels like this is their winning issue. And I don't think it's, look, people want the president to be measured in his approach, which he conceded on. He said in that NBC interview,
gotta have the softer touch.
Yeah, have a softer touch. You can be tough on the criminals, but have a softer touch. He's conceded. Why do they want the president to end all operations when he's already said there's some things that I've learned from this situation? And so I think now that the president has that tone, I don't think that's going to be something they can run on.
So I heard the president, the White House Trump administration issued 50,000 work visas. That's right. Great. Work visas. You want to come over here and work? Let's do it. Do it seasonal. Do it regular. Come over here. We just got to get your paperwork done.
Well, I also like your other idea of have the president out there, get him in front of a stadium, all these people that have done it the legal way, and have the president swear him in.
Yeah, evidently.
Just the visual of that, I think it shows that the president is not anti-immigration.
So, by the way, there's some on the right that don't want to see that.
Well, you know what? They want to lose.
Yeah.
They want to lose.
And that's I'm okay. Not one of them.
And that's okay with me. Just be honest about it. Don't give the president misinformation and say, Mr. President, if you stand firm on this and deport everyone, that you can still win. That's not what he said on the campaign trail. And there's a lot of people in the middle of the road, which I think we need them to win, since the president is the one who built this coalition. They're going to stay at home, or they're not going to vote for the Republicans.
There's a story in the Wall Street Journal today that Texas is feeling the pain of a crackdown on illegal immigration. So I read the story. Part of it is they see people being rounded up. They're actually in their construction uniforms that had the paperwork. So don't put people in here that have the paperwork. Illegal is one thing, but if you have the paperwork and you're in the process, you should not be doing that.
Well, the critics say that these people entered into the country illegal, which is true.
Maybe.
But if they're now going through the legal process, through the asylum claim, these aren't people that are running away from the law. If they're going in every 6 months for their fingerprints and they have their paperwork on him, it's just not reasonable. It's not practical. And I just think that we got to take a step back and think about all the good that the president has done before. Do you want to put all that in jeopardy over this?
So Mike Lawler, who's in a battleground district in New York,
which
is
going to
be an uphill battle,
yeah.
And he said this yesterday, and tell me what you think about his idea, cut 24.
There's got to be a legal path forward, not a path to citizenship, but a legal path forward for people to come out of the shadows so that they can work legally, that they can pay their taxes, pay any back taxes owed, pay a fine, not collect government benefits, and not commit a crime. That is the basis of the Dignity Act, so that we can actually start to solve a crisis that has been in effect for 40 years. We have over 25 million people in this country who are undocumented. You're not rounding them all up and kicking them out. It's not realistic.
So I'm the only reason why I buy into it is because he sealed the border. If he didn't seal the border, I go, what are you doing? You're giving it to a magnet, but now you can't get in if you want to.
I agree with the spirit of it. I'm not sure this legislation is the right tool. Brian, you're right that he sealed the border, but they got to make that permanent. You know, that is the one thing that they're missing, is that the Americans are, there's some issues with Ronald Reagan and what he did, right?
Because he didn't seal the border.
Because he didn't seal the border. And what people are have some whiplash about that. So if they do a bill like this, they have to make the measures on the border permanent. That means the military stays there. That means the Coast Guard, every single operation that is there, the assets have to be there permanently.
Right. And it's got to be financed. But this is the opportunity after the midterms to do something comprehensive, to seal the border, and then to give also people that are here 10, 15 years a chance, not a citizenship,
but a chance at
a long-term work visa.
Work visa. Some of them don't even want citizenship. They just want to be able to work.
Right. Here is more from him. Cut 25.
So how do you deal with this in a way that is both compassionate but tough? And I guarantee you, 10 out of 10 would take the deal to forego citizenship to have a legal path forward. And we have a broad bipartisan coalition that has come together behind that. There's over 30 co-sponsors, Republicans and Democrats. And in my opinion, that is a key component of actually fixing this problem. It is not amnesty. It is not just letting people stay in this country. The fact is they would forego citizenship. They would not get the right to vote.
All right,
they would, however, have a legal path.
Brian, let me tell you why. Although I disagree with the legislation as a whole, I agree with the spirit of it. And I'm going to tell you why. I used to be very hard when it comes. I still am pretty hard when it comes to immigration, especially when it comes to the jobs they're taking for Americans. You've seen it in the truck driving industry, how it's impacted them. They lowered the wages as a result of that. So something that part has to be rectified. Also, when it comes to obviously some of the criminals and what the impact that it's had against people. But you can have those positions and say, let's make it fair for the people, the Americans that actually are doing those jobs, and make sure they're not, their job's not taken. Get the criminals out and give some work visas without tanking everything. And I just think that's the part I'm trying to message to.
What do you mean tanking what? When you say tanking everything?
Well, so there are some conservatives that believe that, no, you just got to go. And
Charlie Kirk was one.
Yes. And I understand with you. In theory, I agree with them. But what I'm telling you is that if you do that, you're going to lose. You're going to lose an election. If you go all in on that theory, and maybe that's, you feel like that's a righteous cause. I don't. When you talk about taxes and everything else that's affecting us on the world stage, protecting our troops and all that, immigration is a big part of that. If I can get border security, have the safety of the American public, and still make sure that the value of these work jobs aren't decreased because they're cutting the market, I'm okay with that.
675,000 people have been deported with this administration in 1 year. 1.9 million did it themselves. They left on their own. 1.9 million. Those are pretty good numbers. You don't have to impress me with numbers. Just get the criminals out. Have Tom Homan in charge. He's very tough, but he's fair.
Well, he's not just fair. He knows what he's doing. And I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but you had a lot of people commenting on this, and they didn't know what they were doing. And Tom Homan has showed you within a week, he's been able to bring the temperature down without abandoning the president's core principles.
I hear you. Lawrence, we're going to see what's going to happen, because the president has said to me on this show, on this radio show, I agree with you. People that have been here 10, 15 years, we got to work something out, because the farmers have told him these are the people that we have. They're the ones who put
him in office. The construction workers, too. He's a builder.
I know. Construction workers across the board, they're low on employees. They can't hire people. So we're not knocking out somebody and not necessarily low wages. So that's a fact. So if you can come in and work, we just want the paperwork done.
Paperwork done.
To be able to track you. And by the way, you are building a track record for yourself.
100%.
So then you apply for that green card, which is a trial period.
That's exactly right. But if people are already cooperating with the system, they may have come in the country illegally, and they start cooperating, they're no longer aristas anymore because we know where they are. Mm-hmm. Part of the administration that they're trying to go after people right now, they're hiding. They're hiding because they're criminals. They're in the shadows because they're a part of the cartel and different operations. And so it is counterproductive to tell people, if you agree to sign on the dotted line, I'm not saying it's going to be permanent, but you have legal status right now until we finish your case. If they're checking in, it's just counterproductive. And all the cops know that.
Yeah, it's going to be a big week. We're going to find out about social media addiction process and find out, did Facebook and all the Meta and all these companies go out to addict you and the kids, your kids? We're going to find that out. Also, we're going to hear about, I have ICE hearings this week, and we're also going to be seeing Ghislaine Maxwell. Mm-hmm. Ghislaine Maxwell. She's going to be testifying from prison. So here we go with the Epstein files again, which are going to be unredacted.
Can I just say,
and you got to go into a reading room to see.
Can I just say this briefly, because I know we got to go? I think the Epstein, what he did, evil. A lot of bad things. And a lot of people that were connected to him were some bad things. But the way that we're handling this story
is
not responsible at all. Normally, if you can't charge someone, if you can't bring charge, then why are we leaking documents about a person? If you don't have enough evidence for a jury to convict the person, you don't get to get an opposition research from the federal government thrown out against you. If someone did something that was criminally negligent, then charge them. You don't get to just put documents out about them with no context. I saw the other day one of the CEOs, I can't even remember his name, that they were leaking a photo and it was like, blacked out and all that. And it makes it seem like he's with two girls. And the two girls are his daughters.
That is egregious.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That is egregious.
It's because people don't know what they're doing.
Right.
They're told to get millions of documents out, and Tom Massey and Ro Khanna are still saying, we're going to sue you for not doing it quicker.
It's out of control. Honestly, I wish a federal judge would step in and say, this is unconstitutional.
I learned no jujitsu into that ice heel.
Yeah, I really want to get back on the mat.
Well, listen, I'm telling you right now, don't make me come over.
Okay, I'll take your command.
Lawrence Jones, thank you. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And that will do it. Seattle reigns above them all in the NFL. The Seahawks, Super Bowl champions for the second time.
29-13, it was over. The game was really over in retrospect at halftime, even though it was close enough, just three field goals. But it was just that Seattle's a better team. That's what everyone thought going in. Then you overanalyze. I've covered 20-plus Super Bowls. No matter what happens, you think by the end of the week, wow, these two are so evenly matched, anything can happen. And then when they started playing, it became clear that the New England Patriots had a Super Bowl defense, but not an offense. And I would add one thing. It doesn't look like Drake May was healthy. So that'll be a story that's written about, too, which I give him credit for. If you want to persevere, you want to make the best of it. But you're talking about people that were wide open that this guy has hit all year long. That's how they win. They turn around from a 6-1 team to a Super Bowl contending team. But I think, New England will be good. I think Seattle will be great for a while. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen's coming up next. We'll talk about the Super Bowl. I thought the halftime, I have no interest in watching somebody sing that doesn't sing in English. I mean, I understand singing with an accent, but how could you book somebody that doesn't speak English to sing in Spanish? I think that's an important part of our culture. But at halftime, on the year 250 of America's birth, you book a Puerto Rican singer who doesn't speak a word of English? Doesn't make any sense. That's why the Turning Point USA, I think, did so well. They have about like 20 million downloads, which is unbelievable. Why? These patriotic guys. They weren't Republicans, not conservatives. Patriotic, that's all.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. The Brian Kilmeade Show, moving your way through. And keep in mind, too, you could always watch the show on the Fox News app. A lot of our guests hop on Zoom now, including my next guest, Senator Mark Wade Mullen, Armed Services and Appropriations Committee. And, Senator, welcome back. Great to see you. Are you in Oklahoma? Did you make your way to Washington yet?
No, I'm still in Oklahoma. I'm actually sitting in my wife's living room. That's why it looks like this. And I'm headed to the airport as soon as we break from here.
I know it's going to be a big week. I mean, with the Epstein files, Ghislaine Maxwell is going to be testifying. You're also going to have. I'm going to keep my eye on what's happening with this whole social media and the addiction thing when that trial takes place, and maybe what it's going to mean for legislation you guys can come up with. But first things first, the President of the United States at some point has got to address the Iranian situation. Senator, do you find it, laudable that he's giving them another chance to talk, but I don't think there's any way that there's an agreement that we come to with them that we would believe and that would be adequate that would work for the Middle East or for our future.
Well, we know the Ayatollah and this regime lies. And so unless there's safeguards in there that we could prove by having actual Americans in there doing the inspections, then there's no way you can do it. However, I don't think there's a deal that's going to be struck here that's going to be able to be sustainable. I think what's happening is, one, the president is putting our assets in position for the opportunity that may arise. I believe he is doing a good faith by moving forward by saying, listen, we operate by peace through strength. That means we want a diplomacy first, but if not, we're prepared to use strength. And by positioning the assets, he's putting the Ayatollah and this murderous regime in their place and essentially putting a warning signal out, because they know we can break their air defense. We know where they're at, because the president has already said that. He said that during the 12-day war, and we're able to keep track of this regime. And at the same time, the Iranian people were saying, hey, we're there for you, because this fight is not with the Iranian people. This fight is against the Ayatollah and his murderous regime that is killing their own people. So I believe the talks are doing two things. One, allowing the president to try diplomacy. Two, allowing us to have our assets in position if diplomacy fails.
So I want you to hear Mark Wayne Mullen, who's in the, the Gang of Eight that gets supposed to get briefed on all highly intelligent, high intelligence operations. Cut 26.
Well, I think the president's got to keep all the options on the table. But I would point out that a few weeks back, when the Iranian people were out in the street en masse, and the president said, hey, don't worry, we're going to come help you, he couldn't because we didn't have our full fleet there, because the aircraft carrier that would normally be in the Mediterranean was off the coast of Venezuela being part of that blockade.
So is he saying you're at fault for having more than one thing to concentrate on? You have to deal with Venezuela, and you have to got to deal with the Persian Gulf. That's the way it is.
We have assets, and we also have the capability to refuel in midair. We did that with the 12-day war. Remember, a lot of our bombers flew out of the Midwest and was able to stay in the air for a significant amount of time. So we had the capability to deliver a strike when and where we want to. What he's leaving out there was the fact that the Arab nations around were pumping the brakes, saying, hold on, there's nobody to replace. We don't want to create a vacuum like we did in Iraq for terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and the Taliban to run free. There's a big reserve of oil that is in Iran. And some people will say, and experts will say, that there may be more reserves, oil reserves, that's been robbed from the Iranian people than in Saudi Arabia. Plus, you got to be careful what Erdogan would do. If destabilization took place in Iran, you could see where Turkey would flood down underneath the term of trying to stabilize it. But we got to keep a close eye. Even though Turkey is somewhat of an ally, they're an ally that you have to verify and enforce, not trust. Right. And so there's a huge vacuum that could take place, and that's why timing is important. Remember, this isn't about regime change. This isn't about, like the Arab Spring underneath Secretary Hillary Clinton and President Barack Obama. This is about the Iranian people getting their country back from the Ayatollah that has done nothing but kill, murder, and destroy the great nation of Iran. So we need leaders to rise up. And right now, there is no leader that is sitting there saying that we're able to take place. In Syria, it took almost 12 years before a leader was able to rise up. And that was President al-Sharari, who is now there, which is, you know, there's issues there, but still he rose to leadership. But it took 12 years of a civil war. We don't have that luxury to allow that to happen in Iran because of the assets that are there.
I know, but we could do the same thing with their oil, couldn't we? I know it'd be a lot harder. We could say, look, this is the person you could be in charge. We're going to run your oil companies until we can get some stabilization there.
Maybe. Iran is much different than Venezuela. Much different. One, the hemisphere is much different. Two, the neighbors are much different. And so the atmosphere, the amount of fighting that would take place without a true strong security force, and does the U.S. want to provide that? Does the U.N. want to provide that security force to keep the bad actors out? Much different situation in Iran than Venezuela.
Yeah, and the whole thing is there somebody to replace him? I don't think the president's identified somebody that we can work with over there, and whether it's somebody with the IRGC or somebody that used to be president, I'm not sure. What do you think about the chance of a shutdown by Friday if you don't come to an agreement on some type of ICE reform? What are you hearing?
I think it's very likely that the shutdown will be DHS only. So that's only roughly about 3.5% of the government. So most people won't recognize it. But I tell you who will recognize it. There are TSA agents that will be asked to work for free again. The Coast Guard that will be asked to work for free again. You'll have some air traffic controllers because of some cross connection with transportation and Department of Homeland Security that won't be receiving their full pay. And you'll have the Secret Service that is guarding a lot of individuals that are highly important to the United States right now that won't be getting paid. So, and FEMA, let's not forget about FEMA when disaster hits, which disastrous has just hit. So I'm very concerned about this because the negotiations that were supposed to be taking place isn't taking place, not in good faith. They've had a demand of 10 things they want, Democrats, meaning they have a demand of 10 things they want, which actually all pair with another one. So actually it goes to about almost 23 demands, and they're not sustainable. It's not realistic. They're wanting to handcuff DHS, Department of Homeland Security, from doing their job by allowing Border Patrol to be very restricted and the ICE agents being very restricted to what they can and can't do. And my thing about this, Brian, is Congress passed these legislation for ICE specifically and for DHS. And so if they don't want DHS, meaning specifically ICE agents and the Border Patrol, from doing their job, then Congress needs to pass new laws. Right now, they are bound to do their job, and they're not willing to actually be in the room to negotiate what their demands are, other than, you know, defund them. And that's just a non-starter. Republicans are supporting strong borders and going after the criminals that are in this country illegally.
Judicial warrants are a non-starter. They say there's roving patrols happening right now. Let's say there are. The president could, Tom Homan, I think, would reel that in anyway. Body cameras are already done. Masks, you got to be crazy. You know, it's okay for protesters to wear a mask. It's okay to make us wear masks for 2 years, but we got to take it down from ICE. Why is that? And they want some type of ID, which could be done with numbers. You could have an ID number, just like you see with pilots and others.
And badges. Well, we have badges. The reason why they want the ID and they want the mask taken off is because they want to dox these individuals,
yeah,
and they want threaten them. No, there's no other reason why, because officers have badge numbers. That's what they give. They don't actually have to even give their full name. They give the badge number. When you start talking about doxing, look what they did to the place of worship where they thought one of the ICE agents officers went to. Look what they did to the hotels, the restaurants.
Yep.
And so now you're going to put their families at risk, because when you expose who they are, these individuals are going to be targeted at their homes. So that's a major security issue. Judicial warrants. A lot of people don't realize what judicial warrants are. Judicial warrants means that every single illegal, before ICE could arrest them, or really before local municipalities or sheriffs or state troopers could arrest anybody, they would have to get a judicial warrant. They'd have to go to court. They'd have to ask the judge to give a warrant before they could arrest somebody that's here illegally, which is absolutely absurd. That's like saying you have to have a judicial warrant before you can arrest somebody that has a DUI. So basically what would take place is that our entire country would become a sanctuary state if we actually did judiciary warrants, which is exactly why the Democrats are asked that, which is exactly why the Democrats want it.
I want you to hear what Mike Lawler said. He thinks with the border sealed and the controversy on ICE, regardless, he thinks something could be done right now. Cut 24.
There's got to be a legal path forward, not a path to citizenship, but a legal path forward for people to come out of the shadows so that they can work legally, that they can pay their taxes, pay any back taxes owed, pay a fine, not collect government benefits, and not commit a crime. That is the basis of the Dignity Act, so that we can actually start to solve a crisis that has been in effect for 40 years. We have over 25 million people in this country who are undocumented. You're not rounding them all up and kicking them out. It's not realistic.
How do you feel about that pathway towards talking about something about the 25 million that are here, maybe for a long period of time?
Well, zero starter if we're talking about amnesty towards citizenship.
True.
Mike made it very clear we're not doing that. I think there would be a conversation that might have towards like DACA individuals that were brought here under the age of 18 by their parents. Maybe if you want to talk to someone that's been here in the country for 10 years or longer, I don't know. There's a conversation it could have, but all these individuals that flooded over here that we have no idea who they are at all during the Biden administration, absolutely not. They were trafficked. They were criminals. We know that jails were emptied. We know that for sure in Venezuela. And so I think there's a cutoff. You can't just simply say that that's for everybody. I think if you wanted to have that conversation, that needs to be a very long conversation that Democrats and Republicans, and we took the people, meaning the people that elected us, and we take them into consideration too, because they're the ones living among individuals just like we all are. So I think that's a very difficult path, but I'm not saying that it's not an absolute non-starter, but it is if we talk anything about amnesty at all.
I hear you. I just want to see if there's going to be a pathway there. And Senator, just real quick, on the Voting Act, we got 73% of the country who thinks you should have voter ID. Is there some type of compromise? Has any Democrat talked to you and said, yeah, I saw that poll too, I understand where the American people are at? Or are they just singing from Senator Schumer's hymn book and saying your SAFE Act is Jim Crow 2.0, which includes voter ID?
Well, the whole thing about Jim Crow 2.0, keep in mind, 37 states already have this. The only states that don't have it is 13 that are all Democrat states. They all went for Harris. I imagine there's some type of correlation between there. And by the way, the 37 states, there's no suppression of the minority vote. There's no lawsuits going on. There's no issues happening. It's just what the Democrats claim every time they don't have a logical argument. They just claim it's racist. The truth is that there's plenty of Democrats that are representing states that have voter ID already, and they are willing to have a conversation, just not publicly. Typically, what that conversation has to do with is immigration reform,
yeah,
true immigration reform. And I chair the No Labels group, where we have Republicans and Democrats that come along, and that No Labels group, we've had a very strong bipartisan approach to saying, hey, listen, if worse comes to worse, maybe we can put immigration reform with DHS, and we can add the SAVE Act, because it's going to be negotiated,
yeah,
because the SAVE Act is what we want. They want immigration reform, and maybe there's a longer conversation, but you can't have it within a week. You can't do this in the 2-week time that the Democrats demanded we do the CR for. So if they want to have that conversation, Brian, we all need to come back to the table and maybe extend the CR for DHS for maybe 6 more weeks, and then get into a room with President Trump and have this longer conversation about this. Because I think the SAVE Act is very, very, very important. And people that said it's federalizing the election, that's not accurate, because federalization, it doesn't happen when you're just requiring what the Constitution says, that you have to be a citizen of the United States to vote. And so, because we're not telling states when, where, and how to have the election, we're just saying you got to prove to be a citizen, which is well within the constitutional right for us to enforce.
Senator Markway Mullen, thanks so much. Good luck in your pathway over to D.C. It is freezing over here. I guess it's cold over there, too, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Senator, thank you. When we come back, we'll take some of your calls, reflections on the Super Bowl and some of the anti-Americanism, sadly, that take place in front of our team in the winter, or some of our Winter Olympians. You listen to Brian Kilmeade Show.
The headlines, the stories behind them, and the people who make them. Only on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We're going to do another halftime show for the country next year. So wow. I'm breaking a little news here, Brian. At 20 million, at very minimum, I think that number is going to go higher, 40, maybe even 50 in the next 24 hours. So I can tell you that's a shot across the bow. People are paying attention. And, you know, if you give us a year to plan this thing, I'm really excited to see what we can pull off. But we got to do it for the country. And this was a massive success, and we were grateful to do it.
Yep, that is Andrew Colvin, who joined me last night on One Nation, breaking the news. They got between 10 and 25 million downloads on various platforms that they were on. They were streaming on Turning Point USA with Lee Bryce and Kid Rock headlining, and Gabby Barrett also there. So I thought it was great. I thought it was really good. And they're doing it again next year. Why wouldn't they? They in the middle. They advertise for jobs. So you're a young person saying to yourself, I have trouble getting on track. You got, they're asking to see if they want to. They're going to hire you. They're going to hire people. Then if you know about Turning Point, if you listen to this show, you probably would fit in great with your agenda. But I was really disappointed in what I've seen so far from the Winter Olympics. Listen, I don't follow downhill skiing or snowboarding. Either do you, or ice skating, unless you're in a niche sport. I appreciate the athletes. I love athletes that are doing stuff that can't, that doesn't get you rich, but it is just dedicated. You just want to be the best. And that's why I couldn't believe when I'm hearing this about from different athletes. For example, we had Hunter Hess. Here is Quinn Dellinger. She is a freestyle skier who happens to be gay. Cut 44.
Yeah, the political divide in the United States is very prevalent, and competition and sports is always a way to bring people together. And I think the Olympics is a great spot in that, where it brings every country and all athletes and all aspects of people from everywhere together. So I think that this is just a great way to show one country.
Okay, that was a good comment from Quinn Dellinger. That was not the one I was talking about. Listen to Hunter Hess, cut 43.
It brings up mixed emotions to represent the U.S. right now, I think. It's a little hard. There's obviously a lot going on that I'm not the biggest fan of. And
really? So we always thought that skiers and snowboarders need to agree with all policies in the administration. Do you think that Jesse Owens agreed with everything going on in the U.S. during segregation, but he still competed with the U.S. against Hitler and his promise of an Aryan race? What's going on here?
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I know many of you took off today. Hopefully you're listening maybe for different, because you're finally able to listen, because usually at work. Or I hope you're listening anyway if you didn't go to work. So we're back in action today. It was a bad game, just an imbalance. It happens once in a while. We've had some fantastic Super Bowls. We didn't get one this time. Bottom of the hour this time, we'll talk to Steve Mora, former chief of staff at the U.S. House of Representatives and founder of the Ukrainian Freedom Project. I want to talk about what's happening over there. We are still trying to land that plane and stop the fighting, which has turned out to be a real bear, because the Russian bear does not want to stop fighting, even though they're losing 35,000 soldiers a month. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
You know, a lot of times athletes are hesitant to talk about political views and how we feel about things. I feel heartbroken about what's happened in the United States when, I'm pretty sure you're referencing ICE and some of the protests and things like that.
Chris Lillis feels heartbroken. My heart breaks for the Olympian. Focus on your sport. How the new ungrateful American Olympians are ruining the Winter Games and the underwhelming Super Bowl. We'll talk about that. Sports is now caught up in the political scrum. We'll discuss.
Number two.
If Iran doesn't think President Trump will strike, if they keep just fooling around with these negotiations and they're not serious about taking them somewhere, they have a very short memory.
Yes. Governor Huckabee, now Ambassador Huckabee over in Israel. Iran-U.S. talks, an exercise which will yield absolutely nothing. It's time the U.S. ends this evil empire, but it won't be easy. But delaying will only make it harder to win. As Netanyahu heads to the White House and moved up his trip.
Number one.
Unfortunately, we haven't heard back from the White House or Mike Johnson or Lita Thune in terms of the demands that we've put on the table, common sense demands. On behalf of the American people.
Yes, Hakeem Jeffries and common sense don't usually end up in the same sentence. Only when he says it doesn't really apply. 5 days until a shutdown. That's where we might just be heading, unless both sides can thaw out their ICE standoff. I see an easy off-ramp. So do you. Compromise, guys. We already know you could declare it a win. You got Tom Homan in. Christine Ohm's been pushed aside. You got the last guy who was in charge who was told to go do something else. You got to win. Lyons is back there, again, acting director of ICE. You also have a situation where we put body cameras on. They're not going to remove the mask. ID numbers are probably perfectly okay. Quick note, you can now find the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're very proud about this on YouTube. So we got our show clips. We got the show and clips from everything. For example, I hosted Will Cain on Friday, did One Nation last night. You'll see some clips from that. So go to youtube.com/@TheBrianKilmeadeShow, and I think you'll love it. Now, back to what we were discussing, and that is a would-be shutdown. Why would we have a shutdown? Because they want some changes to ICE and the DHS. But if you shut down the DHS, you shut down TSA, air traffic controllers, you got to tell Coast Guard they're not going to get paid. Is that really worth it to you to go through all that because you want some changes to ICE when you already got some changes to ICE? To me, it is a shutdown. You thought the last one was stupid. This one will be even more idiotic. Why it works for Democrats, I think, is because it will slow down the economy, which is picking up steam on all counts. And that's what they did last time. They slowed down the economy, which is really, in many ways, I mean, we went over 50,000 at the Dow, and they weren't really tech stocks that did it. These are industrial stocks that it's happening, which gives people a sense that they could be, you know, a part of the solution instead of part of the shutdown. So we'll have to see if John Fetterman's right. Now, Fetterman came out and mentioned yesterday on the weekend show, on Maria's show, that he's looking at the shutdown opportunity. And he sadly, even though he won't vote for it, he thinks it could happen. Cut 17.
No, I absolutely would expect that it's going to shut down. I know that the Democrats, we provided, I think it was 10 kinds of basic things. And then the Republican pushed back quickly, saying that that's like a Christmas wish list and that they're non-starters. I truly don't know what specifically are the Democrats' red lines that it has to be. Certainly not going to get all 10. But now, if I had to say now, they would probably expect that there is going to be a shutdown because things are just drowned down to committed to do that.
Yeah, well, I can tell you right now, the non-starters. The non-starters are the judicial warrants. The non-starters are taking off the masks. Do you think they like wearing masks? Do you remember what a pain in the ass that was? Walking around with your mask on? How many times people told you to pick it up, put it over your nose? Nobody, very few people liked it. A lot of Democrats liked it, but very few people liked it. Now they say we got to take off the mask. Why do you have to do that? You want to find out what law enforcement's doing? So you want to be able to sue later on? Because, I don't know, you want to be able to dox, find out, label, be able to harass them at their hotels like you've been doing already? But this way you could do it specifically and have the name called out while you're doing that? Senator Bill Hagerty talked about the chaos in Minneapolis, and he knows exactly why there was chaos in Minneapolis, because it's a sanctuary city. And those are the ones complaining now. Cut 19.
This isn't a serious negotiation. This is all happening in the media trying to, you know, motivate a radical left base. The main difference between what we're seeing in Minneapolis, Shannon, and the situation that you and Senator Warner were just discussing is a lack of cooperation. Look no further than Memphis, Tennessee. In Memphis, in Tennessee, we actually have cooperation with local authorities. If the local authorities would cooperate in Minneapolis with ICE, they would issue the detainer. The ICE agent would go directly to the jail, pick up the person, and move on. It takes 4 to 8 times more agents to go into the field to go after the same criminal. That's why you have so many people in Minneapolis. That's why this is so chaotic.
Is there anything he said that you doubt? 650 people arrested in West Virginia, illegal immigrant criminals. Did anyone complain about that? Hundreds have been scooped up. They say 4,000 have been scooped up in Minneapolis. Don't you think that has a lot to do with the crime decrease, even though you're about 250 cops shy? Of course it does. And I understand from a great source that Minnesota is cooperating, giving them access to prisons, communicating with local police, and they're providing backup when the situation may show itself. I want to talk about the Super Bowl real quick. Seattle, not a surprise to many, a favorite, won, but how easily they won with an offense that really couldn't keep up with them, that didn't really belong on the same field. It wasn't like when the Patriots of old with, I think it was Steve Grogan or Tony Eason, was taking on the Mighty Bears. I think it was, the final score was 49-3. This was closer, but they were truly outplayed. Here's how it sounded, cut one. So, and Mike McDonald, in just his second year, mentored by John Harbaugh, now of the New York Giants, formerly of the Ravens, was an intern when he started, a young guy now, ran the defense, was brilliant. Clint Kubiak, the offensive coordinator, becomes the new head coach of the Raiders after leaving. He left after the game. Cut six is Clint.
I've said it a million times, a million different ways, but I think if you really think about what he's overcome, you just got to have so much respect for him. And because this league will beat you down. It'll beat you down as a coach, as a player, and you have to really love what you're doing and love the people you're doing it with to keep going. And that's the kind of joy he brought to our building is he just the love of the game. He's a competitor, and it's been a real honor to coach him.
Sam Darnold, who he's talking about, talked after the game about the fact he was drafted by the Jets, considered a bust, sent to Carolina where he did not well, and then he was sent to San Francisco as a backup, and he learned a ton. And when the starter went down, Brock Purdy went down, he played very well, caught the attention of the Minnesota Vikings when he was a free agent. They signed him to back up J.J. McCarthy. McCarthy gets hurt, the rookie, and he becomes a starter and looks so good, he ends up with a multi-million dollar deal to go to Seattle and then wins a Super Bowl. Cut five.
Your fifth team in 8 seasons. What gave you the belief, the will, to know that you could stand up here on this stage holding this trophy?
It's easy. My teammates and my coaches, they've believed in me ever since the beginning of OTA's training camp. And that was our mindset. Every single day we came to work. And, hey, I got a shout-out. Our offensive line, our tight ends, our receivers, and, of course, the running backs. For everything that they did tonight, it was special in the run game. But our defense, man. Hey, 12s, make some noise for our defense.
And the 12, that's the extra man. It was seeming like a Seattle crowd in San Francisco. It was close to logistically. And I don't know how many people really thought the Patriots were going to win. Lastly, before I move on, I want you to hear from the coach that won 3 Super Bowls in the past as a player, Mike Vrabel. Cut 7.
proud of everything that they did. I'm disappointed, just like they are. I reminded them that we're 307 days into to what hopefully is a long, successful relationship and program. And it's okay to be disappointed. We have to be disappointed and upset together. And, you know, like I always do, I tell them I'm appreciative of them. I'm thankful. I'm grateful that I get to coach them. And, you know, we don't want to – part of our identity is not being a front runner. And so, again, just like every year somebody's going to lose this game, and we have to remember what it feels like and make sure that it's not repeated.
Yeah, they'll add some pieces and they'll be back contending, but they're no longer in the basement. They're on the right track. They picked the right coach, and that seems to be the nature of this league. So at the same time, we have the Winter Olympics going on. We got Bad Bunny at halftime. I guess downloads, I must see, he must have talent. I don't see it. Sing Spanish. I don't like it. I'm not against Spanish, but I mean, to have one Spanish song, but every single song on the on what is now the American pastime, I don't get it. You want to make sure the Hispanic community watches, but you don't need to kowtow to them to pick a Spanish-speaking artist. Meanwhile, the Olympics, you got some really ungrateful Olympians who, in their defense, they keep getting asking these questions by what I think are left-wing media looking for headlines to have some 20-something-year-old disparage the country because we're not living up, air quotes, to their high expectations, I guess. Here is Quinn Dellinger. Quinn is somebody that said the right thing when asked. Cut 44.
Yeah, the political divide in the United States is very prevalent, and competition and sports is always a way to bring people together. And I think the Olympics is a great spot in that, where it brings every country and all athletes and all aspects of people from everywhere together. So I think that this is just a great way to show one country.
Cut 42 is Chris Lillis, freestyle skier.
As athletes, we're proud to represent our country. I love the USA, and I think I would never want to represent a different country in the Olympics. With that being said, you know, a lot of times athletes are hesitant to talk about political views and how we feel about things. I feel heartbroken about what's happened in the United States when, I'm pretty sure you're referencing ICE and some of the protests and things like that. I think that as a country, we need to focus on respecting everybody's rights and making sure that we're treating our citizens as well as anybody with love and respect. And I hope that when people look at athletes compete in the Olympics, they realize that that's the America that we're trying to represent.
What are you talking about? Think it through. So what is actually bothering you that we're getting murderers out? Do you want to mention the thousands that are gone now? The 1,900 that self-deported? The 650,000 that was scooped up, 70% of which have criminal records, either convicted or charged? And then if there's some other people caught up in the network, okay, you could be upset by that, but go check it out for yourself before you jump to conclusions. And those people scooping up illegal immigrants, they're putting their lives on the line for very little money compared to what you're going to make if you're successful as an athlete. So I'm sorry we're not living up to your expectations. You know, during World War II, a lot of people think that putting Japanese in internment camps was bad. But there was a lot of pride. Nobody was speaking out against this country. I couldn't find anything, including the segregation was taking place in the South, because there was so many hellacious things going on in various countries. You ever hear the Chinese speaking out and others? They don't have the right to speak out. I give you the right to speak out, but why would you want to? As Michael Ruzioni said, in 1980, by the way, in 1980, when interest rates were in double figures, did that make you depressed? They were coming up the Vietnam era, that the whole military had rusted out, that we were in the so-called malaise under Jimmy Carter. Do you think that Michael Ruzioni worried about that as he took on the Russians and then later beat Finland and won a gold medal? He later deleted his challenge to Hunter Hess after he said this, cut 43.
It brings up mixed emotions to represent the U.S. right now, I think. It's a little hard. There's obviously a lot going on that I'm not the biggest fan of, and I think a lot of people aren't. I think for me, it's more I'm representing my like friends and family back home, the people that represent it before me, all the things that I believe are good about the U.S. I just think if it aligns with my moral values, I feel like I'm representing it. Just because I'm wearing the flag doesn't mean I represent everything that's going on in the U.S. So, yeah, I just kind of want to do it for my friends.
So that's
family.
Just it. I am sure that everybody that sings the national anthem, that gets on the podium, that walks in the parade, agree with everything going on in the U.S. at all times, from 76 to 80 to 84, 88, boycott the games over in Russia, and the 84, they come and boycott our games, and we boycott their games in 80. I'm sure that everything that was going on in the U.S., that every athlete agreed with all of it. But they just said, yeah, I represent this country, been through a lot. We emerged as the number one military and economic power in the world. We're the superpower, the voice of freedom. Maybe you didn't like the Vietnam War. That's fine. I'm going to compete. You know, it's just amazing to me that that's the sentiment you feel. If you're upset about the country, you could start off by saying, love the country. You know, for the most part, I'm here as an athlete. There's certain things I change, but I'm not running for office. There's certain things I like, but I'm not running for office. I'm not really endorsing anybody. So number two is the thing that was brought up too is, and, you know, Clay Travis brought it up. Why is it all these American reporters asking American athletes to put down the country? You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Ultimately, it's up to the family as to whether the money gets paid or not. And so as a result, I think, and Savannah said that they're willing to pay. So is that going to happen? Are they ever going to get proof of life? You wouldn't want them to pay it until you get proof of life. But I'm not convinced, if these notes are legitimate, that they'll ever see proof of life. She may pay it and not see her mother.
How often does that happen?
It has happened. It has happened. Where there's, it was, the actual kidnappers, they took a person and then they got the ransom and then they left.
So that's who we're looking at now. The Guthrie situation, Savannah Guthrie's mom, Nancy. That was Brad Garrett. He's a retired FBI agent, and he's not convinced that this is a legitimate letter, and they have not provided proof of life and a way to communicate directly. They go into local stations. So that's kind of throwing a lot of the so-called experts off in the hunt for her. Now we're in day nine. It's just this, everything about this is throwing even the most savvy investigator off. You know, going back and pounding the car, going back looking at the septic tank, opening and closing the crime scene is crazy. Coming back into the gas station and saying, I got a mysterious car, and then we don't hear anything after. And then the sheriff goes to a basketball game at the same time Savannah Guthrie and her brother and sister are releasing another tape directed to the hostages. Crazy.
Is 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I don't trust Vladimir Putin at all. And I do feel like at times Putin has played President Trump when the president said, well, let's, stop bombing Ukraine for a week or two. He gave him a couple of days. It feels like all of these starts and stops with negotiations around Ukraine simply allow the Russians to continue to pound the Ukrainians. Again, when the president has stepped away from kind of the common alliance we had with our NATO allies against the Russian aggression in Ukraine, I think our hand has been weakened. And the president does seem to have a soft spot in his heart for Vladimir Putin.
So Senator Mark Warner should be embarrassed to say that, because he was the one who trumpeted the whole Russia hoax that derailed this country and our relations with Russia for 2.5 years. And now he's out there trying to say that the president's got a soft spot for Vladimir Putin. And by the way, where were they going right now? They had the tight alliance. Joe Biden led a tight alliance. Were they even talking to the Russians? Were they even bringing an end to the violence? Was it even an attempt? No, they weren't worthy of a conversation. Trump came in and is engaged, and he acts like the other way was the right way. If they did not slow walk weapons, we might not still be in a war right now. Ukraine could have won right off. Let's bring in
Let's bring in Stephen Moore. Stephen Moore is the former chief of staff of the U.S. House of Representatives, founder of the Ukrainian Freedom Project, and raises money to help the Ukrainians withstand this barrage of drone strikes that's destroying their energy sector. Stephen, welcome back.
Thanks, man. Good to see you.
So tell me the state of the war from your perspective.
Well, you know, I was in Kyiv about 10 days ago. I live in Kyiv, and it's cold there, man. And
do you have heat?
No, actually. Most people don't have heat in Kyiv and in Ukraine. And the Russians are bombing the facilities that produce steam that's piped through all the apartment buildings. This is an old Soviet era thing that they did in Ukraine back in the day. And that's the main source of heat. And the Russians are bombing them. And, you know, even those of us that have intermittent electricity, you know, my wall unit pipes in air from the outside and heats it and then heats my apartment. But, you know, at 20 degrees, the air is too cold for my wall unit to heat it. So, and you only have 3 or 4 hours electricity a day and you don't know when it's coming. And so when that happens, you got to cook, you got to wash your clothes, you got to crank up the heat to try to heat your apartment. It's not a nice place to live right now.
What about the fact that they were going to not hit the energy sector for a week? That didn't work.
Well, that's just nonsense because, you know, it takes Putin a week to build the drones to, you know, and set up the next attack. So it's always a week. So that was just some nonsense PR by Vladimir Putin who, you know how if Putin's lying?
He's talking.
His lips are moving, yeah. And so it's just nonsense, man.
So they're in trilateral talks. They got a hostage exchange. We know that. I mean, prisoner exchange. We know that.
It's good to see.
And now it looks like Ukraine says one of the things they plan on doing is upping the casualty numbers from 35,000 in December. They think this year they're going to look to kill 50,000 Russians a month. You would think that would result in victory, but there's some saying that that's not going to be enough because he has no value in Russian life.
Well, look, you know, our adversaries are Russia, Iran, China, and North Korea, and all the Islamic extremist movements. Those guys are all working together. What do they have in common? No value of human life. And the Russian strategy is just to push meat into the war machine. And, you know, I have friends in Ukraine, like machine gunners at the front, who just had to stop because they got tired of killing people. They just, you know, that just people just kept coming and these human waves. And, you know, and you just can't do it after a while.
So what is the spirit in the country now? I heard that Zelensky came out and said he expects this whole war to find the peace to come in June because the president needs it for the midterms. I don't know where he got that from because June's far from November.
Yeah.
So does he understand our system?
Yeah. You know, it's hard to say where that comes from. I've heard that myself. I think that...
He'd end it tomorrow if he could.
Yeah. You know, this is like Israel. You know, it's like if Israel lays down its arms, if Hamas lays down its arms, there's no more war. If Israel lays down their arms, there's no more Israel. Right. And so it's the same with Ukraine. If Ukraine stops fighting, you know, then the Russians are going to roll through and it's going to be a grim place for everybody. But the morale in the country is pretty high, depending, you know, despite how cold it is. People are having parties in the streets.
So I'm hearing that the missile shield has had promise of starting in the new year. Have you heard anything about a missile shield that you guys are working on with the U.S.?
Yeah, there's something called an ERAM, and this is a lower cost version of the Patriot that people are talking about getting over there and having it be the defense shield because
drones are it for Russia. I mean, that's the main thing with Russia, right?
Oh yeah, the Russians send, you know, 1,000 Iranian made Shahed drones a night into Ukraine, and they use it to kill civilians, to take out heating facilities. So these things are about $50,000 a pop. So if you use a $1.5 million Patriot missile to take it out, you know, that's not a long game. And
it's not a smart way to do things.
Yeah.
So right now we're in a situation where the trilateral talks are going. The short pause in the war has stopped. So we're looking at and we also find out, you said, and I agree with you, that if India legitimately does stop buying Russian oil, which is cheap.
Yeah.
They get cheap Russian oil. And they had relations with Russia prior.
Yeah.
Why? As a hedge against China.
Yeah.
So when Russia and China were rivals, India was threatened constantly by China in their border skirmishes. They sided with Russia.
Yeah.
So we were fine with, you know, you do your thing. That's your region. But when the war breaks out, they said, yeah, leave us out of this. Russia provides a lot of our arms, and now they're going to give us discount oil. And we were disappointed, but there was no pressure that Joe Biden didn't put any pressure on India to say, wait, we just, you know, Modi, you're a buddy. You were just over here. Two administrations looked at you as an enterprising partner. What happened? So Trump put pressure in a different way. They continue to buy oil. But that changes.
Yeah, that's 18% of Russia's revenue. And, you know, we go back to those 50,000 people a month that are...
That's what they hope for.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I know it's sad to say, but that's what the Ukrainians hope to inflict on Russia.
Well, it's currently 35,000 a month, so it's a real number.
Which is amazing.
Now, think about this. Putin has gone in... 4 years ago, Putin went into Ukraine, and he has taken only 20% of the country and lost 1.2 million soldiers, all right? So now think about that in terms of George W. Bush in 2003. If he'd gone into Iraq and in 2007 said people 4 years later that, you know, we've taken 20% of the country and lost 1.2 million Americans... There's no one in the world who would think that's a win.
He wouldn't have continued.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't have happened. So Putin has all the money in the world from his oil revenue, and he is paying these soldiers to go into Ukraine four times in cash what we pay an E-1, an entry-level soldier in the United States. And, you know, and it goes a lot farther in Russia because Russia's average monthly wage is about 20% of America's. So these people are getting paid a fortune. These poor people in the regions are getting paid a fortune to go into Ukraine.
Right.
And you know, die on the sword.
A lot of them aren't going to survive.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw last week, Finland knew we were starting these trilateral talks, and they made a statement in that, I don't want to hear the U.S. say rule five, NATO rule five, like deterrence or defense, because Finland feels, I don't want to go to war against Russia because of what we promise Ukraine, who's not a NATO member. I thought, wow, that's a convoluted way for a brand new NATO nation to respond to that. Well, but we are, the UK and France said we will put troops in there.
Oh, you know, that's interesting.
As a tripwire.
Yeah, I had not seen that. But, you know, here's one. I was in Finland about 3 months ago, and they were really excited to be part of NATO. And they don't say if the Russians attack, they say when the Russians attack. So I'm kind of surprised to hear they said that because, the Finns were all on it when I was there. But here's the attitude of the frontline nations like Poland and the Baltic states and Finland and the other ones that are very close to Russia. They need help from behind because they're going to keep all their troops in their countries. They're not going to send any to Ukraine because if Ukraine falls, they need those troops. So the troops that are going to come stabilize Ukraine need to be from France, from Germany, from the UK, and places that don't have an immediate threat from Russia.
Steve Moore's here, and Steve Moore's got a great title in Ukraine. He's trying to help him out the best way he can. He is the Ukrainian Freedom Project founder, which raises money for Ukraine aid. So we understand this, that Starlink is playing a role, and it's helping the Russians inadvertently. Now, Russian mill bloggers, who evidently have a habit of telling the truth over there,
it's kind of weird,
continue to claim that SpaceX's recent block of unregistered Starlink terminals in Ukraine is hindering Russian combat operations in Ukraine. Have you heard this?
Yeah, that's something that's all over. People are talking about that is an amazing thing because the Ukrainians use Starlinks. I've bought several Starlinks for folks near the front because.
What does it give you?
Well, it gives you connectivity. All this stuff, we are in a connected war. And, all these drones, everything else, all this, all the communications.
More than any other time. Drones.
Oh, yeah. Here's something that a lot of people don't know is right now, the Ukrainians, 70% of the weapons they're fighting with are weapons they've made because the Ukrainian defense tech is just out of this world. These guys are all good at math. All these guys in Ukraine are better at math than you and me. They're engineers and they've built this stuff that is just really taking out the Russians and it's better than the stuff we build here. And it all is connected and it all is, connected on Starlink. And the game is, can you jam the other guy's connected weapons? Right now the Ukrainians are winning that. And Starlink, Elon Musk, is helping out.
Right. And he was all Ukraine. Then he was kind of indifferent. Now it's pretty clear where he stands. And I think that could be the benefit. I just hope we find a way. This is the way I think, Steve, the way to end it quicker is what Biden should have done right away. What do you need? Get it to you right away. Everything that they've asked for under Joe Biden, they eventually got,
Yeah. But they got it so late, it was almost inefficient. Oh, we're going to give you F-16s, but first we got to train you for a year.
Yeah.
And then they never came. Trump had to deliver the F-15s or F-16s.
Yeah.
So now if you get them Patriots, we're not going to get you Patriots. You don't really have Patriots. Okay, you got Patriots. You have HIMARS. You can't really get your HIMARS. Yeah. We got HIMARS.
Oh, yeah.
Right? We got ATACMS. Not enough, but they got ATACMS. Okay, you got them. But if they ever just gave it to them when they had it, and, you know, Ukraine could have done better tactically and maybe listened to us, in my humble opinion, from what I understand, which you would know better. Tactically, I think we had a better plan. They did their own plan, and their surge did not work 2 years ago.
Yeah, and but that's all, again, predicated on having the weapons they need at the time they needed them. And that surge that they did, you know, if you look at some of the NATO commanders, they say, you know, you want to have number superiority, artillery superiority, you want to have air superiority. And the Ukrainians had none of them, yet the Biden administration pressured them.
Without
to
a Navy, they were destroying the Russian Navy.
Yes.
Without any help from NATO, they reopened the waterways to allow them to deliver their grain.
Yeah.
This is underappreciated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Ukrainians, again, as you point out, they've got like six ships or something. And with their missiles, they have taken out a third of the Russian Black Sea fleet. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Their missiles and their drones. And, you know, and we need here's what's happened is that we have put billions and billions of dollars into Ukraine to build their army. Ukraine now has 900,000 people in their army. It's by far the largest, most powerful in Europe.
Yeah, the second biggest army in the region after Russia.
Yeah, exactly.
So think about this, America. You say, well, it's not our war. Well, think about it. Do you want the second biggest army to join the biggest army? And who do you think is going to stop that army if they combine and try to take Western Europe? It's going to be us again.
Yeah. Yeah. It just doesn't get better from here, you know. And but, you know, again, our defense tech is kind of like made in the desert here. And it's not as good as the stuff that the Ukrainians are making. They got $500 kamikaze drones. Our cheapest kamikaze drone is $100,000.
No way.
Yeah, this is true, man.
So are we beginning to combine technologically? Because I was in Germany on a military base in Wiesbaden, and they had Ukrainians there, and they had tech guys who weren't in the military working with our military on this stuff. Do you see a cohesion there?
Yeah. Well,
not enough?
Not enough. And there needs to be like an organized method.
Because we need their drones.
Oh, yeah.
I hate to tell you.
Oh, yeah. We need their drone defense. We are not prepared for a drone
war.
And, you know,
they had to be.
Yeah, they figured it out. You know, they lost a lot of people to figure it out. And they have. And their stuff's working. And our stuff doesn't. We send our stuff over there. It doesn't work.
The assassination of the lieutenant general who was in the hospital, but he isn't dead, sadly, in Moscow. That freaks them out.
Yeah, that's great. You know, the Ukrainians have showed this Mossad-like ability to get inside Russia and to do these espionage things. And you may remember Operation Spiderweb. They took 117 of these $500 kamikaze drones. They smuggled them into Russia and destroyed $7 billion worth of aircraft inside Russia. You know, they've whacked this general, almost whacked this general. And this guy is a really bad guy. He's the guy that was responsible for poisonings in Europe. He's the guy that was responsible for the torture of POWs, of Ukrainian POWs. And this guy's on his back in a Moscow hospital, and hopefully that he's not going to get up anytime soon.
Absolutely. Stephen, if people want to support you and your cause.
Yeah, UkraineFreedomProject.org. UkraineFreedomProject.org. Listen, we're doing, we're getting generators for people. It's cold there. We're getting, non-lethal equipment for the military, Starlink, stuff like that. And here's the other thing. We're telling the stories. We also have a movie. I told you about this. A Faith Under Siege tells the story of Ukrainian Christians who have been tortured by the Russians and have just overcome through faith. And a faithundersiege.com. Go check that one out.
So for people who say Vladimir Zelensky is shutting down the churches, the Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine, maybe you should sober people up and tell them why he would do that.
Well, you know, the Russian Orthodox Church is a working arm of the Kremlin. And there's branches of the Russian Orthodox Church here in America. ROKOR is one of them. And these all, they report to Kirill, the patriarch. Kirill has declared a holy war on the Ukraine and the West.
He is the religious advisor to Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
The soulless leader of Russia.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he has said if you die fighting in Ukraine, all your sins will be washed away. Now, he stopped short of offering 72 virgins, but it's the same thing that the right. Islamic extremists are doing.
Yeah, it's hard to hit that 72 threshold. So you don't want to overpromise, and you don't get repeat buyers.
Yeah.
Stephen Moore, thanks for all you're doing.
Great to be with you, man. Thanks for getting the story out.
Absolutely. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Now, you know, Kenneth, this moment is funny because I heard you barely even want to break down the huddle. So now you got to talk on the microphone after winning a Super Bowl championship. But what was going through your mind and the mentality that you had to make sure that you were powering this offense throughout the game tonight?
First and foremost, I want to thank God for this, you know, blessing to be here. Also, I want to thank my brothers. You know, this don't happen without them. We went through a lot of adversity this season, but we came together and we stuck together, and, you know, this is what we got.
Kenneth Walker III, MVP of the Super Bowl, ran for over, how many yards was it, Pete? Do you know, was it 135 yards and 27 carries? He was great. First carry from scrimmage, 10 yards, and that kind of set the tone. He proved he could have a running game. This is a guy that had some type of aneurysm and was told you can't play football again. They found a way around it. Here's more, cut three.
If I would tell myself as a kid right now, I wouldn't have guessed that I would be the one to win an MVP. So it's a surreal moment, you know, and it doesn't happen without the guys in the locker room. When a doctor told me I couldn't play no more, I just thought, you know, football was over. You know, that's what I was doing all my life. So it was a shocking moment. But, you know, my dad worked with me throughout that whole process, and he was in the hospital with me as well, and my mom. So just going through that, it just made me grateful for each and every day to be able to go out there and strap up and play this game and just, you know, still be alive for real.
Absolutely. For real. Kenneth Walker, first. To first running back to win in over 20 years, right?
28 years, yeah.
28 years, wow. 135 yards on the ground. Congratulations to him. And I have to tell you, if for those people in the NFC, they're going to be back again. So I'm not sure about the Patriots, but the Patriots are good. They're not great. By the way, check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/@TheBrianKilmeadeShow. I want to continue to grow. You'll love the clips.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your direction. Can't wait to be in Fort Myers, Florida on the 14th, Valentine's Day. We'll be on stage, History, Liberty, and Laughs. If you're patriotic, want motivation, inspiration, you're going to love the show. Streamed on Fox Nation. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. And then on May 30th, I'll be in Reno, Nevada, and then we'll be doing something else in July in Evansville, July 11th in Evansville, Indiana. So just get your tickets. I can't wait to meet you in person. Meanwhile, we have a lot going on this hour. We're going to be joined by Chris Klomp. He's the Director of Medicine and Deputy Administrator, CMS, and another senior advisor to RFK Jr., we also know this. They're trying to crack down on fraud all across this country. In California, they say it's the worst. It's beginning to be uncovered. And don't you think we forgot about Minneapolis. I have not. And I know you have not. And I think it's going to be great to see that unwound. And yesterday, HHS announced some pretty big news. They signed for the Baja Movement, none other than Mike Tyson. So Mike Tyson is not, and I think this is legitimate. Ian O'Connor, by the way, is coming up a little bit later. I'll ask him about that. Columnist with The Athletic, formerly of the New York Post. And I think he's a 6-time New York Times bestselling author. His last book was on Aaron Rodgers. Prior to that was Belichick. So he does fantastic work. But I want you to hear Mike Tyson on Fox and Friends weekend. Now, keep in mind, Mike Tyson always had a huge weight issue. His sister was enormous, obese. And a lot has to do with the Frankenstein food they're forced to eat. And you know about that. And when in low-income neighborhoods, get cheap food is also terrible for you. And a lot of times people say, well, I'm cutting back what I'm eating. But it's what you're eating. It's the problem. That's why Mike Tyson was all in. Cut 46.
Well, we have to start doing it right away. It needs to be done right away. There's not enough time. We need to do this right away. We're losing our children. They're dying at a rapid pace. And we're drinking and eating so much sugar. That's even becoming narcotic. And we're getting addicted to, we haven't become an addict before we even know it. being addicted to sugar. Sugar's pretty much of a narcotic, so we all love sugar. I'm one of those people, too. So we have to just change our pattern of eating in order to be really the strongest country in the world.
That is true. And he said a lot of it we just had no knowledge of. And that's one thing that I've not heard the MAHA movement truly address, is that if you want to get the best food for you, you go to Whole Foods. Whole Foods bought by Amazon famously. And Whole Foods is pretty much, not every aisle, every item, but most of the item, they're good for you. They go out of the way to say, look, this is where to eat. Well, a lot of Whole Foods don't pop up in working class, lower class areas. So what you do is you get a lot of the foods that are cheaper. And a lot of the foods that are cheaper are processed foods. They're terrible for you. So then you get obesity, you get health problems, and they got the medical issues. See how it's all compounded and related? This is what RFK's legacy will be. You can debate him on vaccines. You can debate him on certain things in terms of, I don't love what they're not really pouring money into biotech like they should. But I do like what he's doing with the MAHA movement. And I think the more people like Mike Tyson you get, they can honestly say he used to balloon up by about 30, 40 pounds. Then his sister died of obesity, and his mom, too, had huge problems with her weight. And in retrospect, he says, yeah, I had metabolism issues. Didn't seem like when he was fighting metabolism issues. But the other thing is I ate terrible. No knowledge of it. Thought I was eating cheap and it was affordable. But I found out that a lot of stuff I thought was good for me absolutely wasn't. So that's a minor thing. The other big story that's happening in about 5 days, we could be looking at a shutdown for the most ridiculous reasons. I mean, we're talking about reforming ICE. They got 10 punch points to reform ICE for the Democrats. For them, if they had their druthers, it would be abolish ICE, which is insane. But let's just move on. One thing, they want to take off the mask. Number two, they want judicial warrants. Number three, they want IDs on everybody's uniform. Number four, they want a body cams. Okay. They want announcements before you come into neighborhoods. They don't want to be really bothered in sanctuary cities. So that's not going to work. The thing that's going to work is body cams. Sure. Random patrols. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think you should be driving into Home Depot saying, show me your papers. We're pretty much not going to be allowed to do that in the Constitution, because once you're here, you do have some constitutional rights. Understood. So having said all that, Hakeem Jeffries is still going to town. Cut 16.
Unfortunately, we haven't heard back from the White House or Mike Johnson or Speaker or Leader Thune in terms of the demands that we've put on the table, common sense demands on behalf of the American people. And so in our view, the ball is in the court right now of the Republicans. Either they're going to agree to dramatically reform the way in which ICE and other immigration enforcement agencies are conducting themselves so that they're behaving like every other law enforcement agency in the country, mm-hmm. or they're making the explicit decision to shut down the Coast Guard, shut down FEMA, and shut down TSA, and that would be very unfortunate.
I mean, I know you're in the spin machine. You have to say things that make no sense, to make you seem tough to your base, because after all, you almost got a primary challenge in New York from a socialist. But there was nothing that he said that was accurate, was nothing but bloviating and spin. Nothing. Now, I know, you know, you could say Kevin McCarthy and Speaker Johnson, but they never do it to that extreme. I mean, just come out and say there's 10 demands we haven't heard back. But to come out and say that the Republicans are going to shut this down when it was all your idea and all the appropriations bills were agreed upon until the death of that activist in Minneapolis, and prior to that, the other woman that hit a ICE agent, both of her unfortunate incidents, neither deserved to die. But unfortunately, the situation was leading to them some type of consequential activity, whether it was an ICE agent that was going to be injured or whether it was an individual. And the local, you've heard us talk about this before, but the local politicians are the ones that radicalized everyone. The one that's bringing it back down to earth is Tom Homan. You're going to watch by the end of the week. He already brought 700 ICE agents out and Border Patrol. He'll be bringing probably another 700 by Thursday or Friday. And he says he's got access to the prisons. That's called cooperation. Even if it doesn't play to your base, both parties, I like the idea of cooperation. Don't you? Senator Mark Warner, Virginia, cut 23.
Do I think the government will, the DHS funding will run out based upon the battle over judicial versus administrative warrants? No. Do I think there will be a set of reforms that would be palatable? not just to Democrats, but to the American people. Americans are being killed in Minneapolis. The law enforcement there, the local cops can't do their job because you've got so many ICE agents out and people having their houses raided where then the local police has to come.
Okay, hey, pause. See, this is, he talked himself into circles. I watched him on two shows. He talked himself into circles three times. The police can't do their job because there's so many ICE agents on the street. What are you talking about? If the police were doing their job, you wouldn't need as many ICE agents on the streets, number one. Number two, if you were allowed them to communicate with each other, one could guard the perimeter, the other one could get the worst of the worst out. And because there's ICE agents there, police aren't stopped. They're told not to work. And when you go into a home, when you decide that there's a murderer behind that door or a rapist or a criminal, one of the 7 out of 10 that have been detained have either charges or convictions on some type of crime, the police aren't stopping you from doing that. The police aren't aiding you, I'll tell you that. They're not giving you the lay of the land. That's pretty true. So all you have to do is say, why is it working in Memphis? Why did it work in New Orleans? Why did it work in Washington, D.C.? Why is it working in other states and not working here? Because you went out of your way to radicalize, and now you got Olympians calling out the U.S. government because of that. Meanwhile, 66% of those in America polled were said, I want deporting. I want everyone who came here illegally deported. More practical is Mike Lawler. And this is where I'm heading. I thought he just kind of said, for the people that have been here, they've been obeying the laws, that came here illegally because of a porous border in past administrations, we don't give them citizenship. But you give them a way to stay because these farmers, these meat packers, other employers, restaurants, hospitality will vouch for them, sponsor them. Cut 24.
There's got to be a legal path forward, not a path to citizenship, but a legal path forward for people to come out of the shadows so that they can work legally, that they can pay their taxes, pay any back taxes owed, pay a fine, not collect government benefits, and not commit a crime. That is the basis of the Dignity Act, so that we can actually start to solve a crisis that has been in effect for 40 years. We have over 25 million people in this country who are undocumented. You're not rounding them all up and kicking them out. It's not realistic.
So look, I'm going to take a break. I don't want to take too much time away from Chris Klump. I want to get his director of Medicare and deputy administrator CMS. But that's just reasonable. Now, many of you don't like that idea. All right. But I'm in the real world. I'm not in an ideological world. I'm in a world where I know everyone can't agree with me, that I got to compromise. That's the world I think you got to get to while not giving up your values. You got to do the best you can. Can't get perfect. Can't get everything. Get most. Chris Klump, next.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Under the Most Favored Nation agreements my administration has negotiated, the United States will pay the lowest price paid by any other country. So we're taking the lowest price paid for drugs. We will pay equal to whatever the lowest price anywhere in the world. That's the price that you're going to be paying. It's a tremendous reduction.
Trump RX, Chris Klump joins us now, director of Medicare and the deputy administrator of CMS and senior advisor to RFK Jr., who is HHS secretary. Chris, welcome. Will Trump is the president was referring to getting drug prices down as low as possible. Is that open to everybody?
Absolutely. With last week's historic announcement by the president of TrumpRx.gov, the president unleashed the access to the American people, any American, to the first of what will be many, many, many more drugs coming as the result of his most favored nation drug policies. He's tired of foreign freeloading. He's tired of the fact that we pay three times what the rest of the wealthy world does for the same branded pharmaceuticals from the same manufacturers, the same box, the same plant. And so with the launch of TrumpRx.gov, every American should go visit that site first before they buy a branded pharmaceutical going forward. It's not selling the drugs. It's the single source of truth. It tells you if you're getting the best deal, if you're paying the lowest price in the wealthy world. If your drug isn't there right now, check back. because multiples will be added in the coming weeks and months, reflecting all of the deals that the president has negotiated with the major pharmaceutical manufacturers.
So the major, they'll go to TrumpRx, all these drugs. So in other words, that's the standard bearer of the price. Is it, what is the reason that you got the price lower? Did you, because you're buying it in such bulk?
The reason is fairness. The reason is the fact that when you go talk to the pharmaceutical manufacturers, as the president did, and you ask them, why is it that the United States funds 50% of global research and development? Why is it that we're 60% of revenues? Why is it that we're 65% of pharma, and yet you're charging us three times what you're charging everybody else? The answer was, well, we figured you'd come ask at some point. And they understand it too. They understand it's not sustainable. They understand that we need to retrain the rest of the world. So the way that we're able to get this is the president's demanding that other wealthy countries pay a little bit more, that they pay their fair share. Right now, on average, foreign countries pay about 0.3% of GDP. We pay 0.8% of GDP on pharmaceuticals. He wants that to change. That's already changing.
So, Chris, let's look at what we're seeing now with the subsidy debate that was so fervent in the fall that led to the shutdown. I know the president said, yeah, I'd like to get, if you want to use that money, I want it to go right to the people, not to the insurance companies. The insurance companies were in, they testified. I didn't see anything that really got accomplished as they said their side of the story. Where are we at with that?
Yeah, so much was made about the enhanced premium tax credits, the subsidies that led to this, you know, plus 40-day shutdown of the government. What you didn't see was a whole bunch of people fall off of the marketplace, Obamacare plans. You don't see that in the data. You see enrollments flat to slightly up. What you didn't see was massive increases for the vast majority. By the way, just to be clear, marketplace plans, we're talking less than 10% of America. We talked about Obamacare like that's affecting everybody. It's not. It's like 6 or 7% of the population. Now, it still matters. We need to do right by them, and we can. But what the president's calling for, and he's calling on Congress now to ratify and pass his great healthcare plan, is to lower insurance premiums. He wants to send money directly to the American people. Stop sending money through premium tax credits to the big insurance companies with billions of dollars in extra taxpayer-funded subsidies, and instead send that money straight to eligible Americans. Allow them to buy their health insurance where they want. Fund cost-sharing reductions, which are already possible. This could save taxpayers at least $36 billion and reduce premiums by over 10% in the first year alone.
Chris, when you hear Hakeem Jeffries come out and say the president and his administration has cut Medicare and Medicaid more than any other administration, what do you say?
I don't see it. I see Medicaid having grown by 50% over the last 5 years, peaking at 90 million beneficiaries on what was supposed to be part of the American social contract. You do everything you can, and if you come up short, we're our brother's keeper. We'll step in. And that contract remains sound today. But the program grew
for those eligible,
For those eligible, for those who are not able-bodied, who can't get their insurance somewhere else. But the program spiked at ways that blue states and red states are calling and saying, we can't afford this. It's too big. The Biden administration alone reduced the scale of Medicaid by 15 million beneficiaries. Did you see 15 million a 15 million increase in uninsured lives over the same time frame? No, you didn't. Why not? Because those people could and did get insurance elsewhere. So when I look at it right now and say, well, you know, how do I respond to this on Medicaid? What the president did, what happened in the Working Families Tax Cut legislation, is allow Medicaid to be a sustainable long-term program. He cherishes it. We cherish it. And it's about longevity. It's about lasting. So it's working.
Medicare and Medicaid and Medi-Cal and the things like that, they were supposed to be state run.
They were, and yet the feds fund 62% of those programs. So you know, we've got a bit of a stake in that. That's why the president's, you know, calling on not having illegal immigrants funded by Medicaid, for example. Why should one state that chooses not to subsidize another state that does choose to? So the other thing I'd respond on this, by the way, is show me the cut in Medicaid. At no point does the Medicaid budget go down. It's still growing by over $200 billion. It went from growing 8% a year, 2.5 times GDP, to still 5% a year. It's still growing nearly twice the rate of GDP. The program has not been cut. It simply isn't going to grow $5.4 trillion. What we're doing is wrestling with the fact that we've got a right-size cost. And that's what the president's calling for in the great healthcare plan. We have got to address cost. We've got to make the underlying system work better for all Americans.
So what else are you guys doing to be proactive? I understand about the subsidies supposed to evaporate, the big debate, but what are you guys doing proactively on this in the last minute we have?
Yeah, so you've seen it on drug prices. We're not stopping. I noticed the Wall Street Journal remarked that drug prices have now come down for the first time since they've maintained their index. That's massive. There's more to come. We've talked about lowering insurance premiums. We're focused on maximizing price transparency. That's part of the great healthcare plan. How do we get hospitals to post prices on the wall? How do we have informed consumers who know what they're buying? And ultimately, how do we hold big insurance companies accountable to do what they're supposed to do, which is help their beneficiaries live healthier lives so that Americans can meet their full potential? It's hard to reach your full potential when you're not healthy.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing with the great healthcare
plan. And I also think you guys are cracking down on fraud. That seems to be a concerted effort, and that would certainly help. I think we're all for that. Chris Klump, thanks so much. I know you're always busy. Director of Medicare and Deputy Administrative CMS and Senior Advisor to RFK Jr. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Brian. Nice to see you.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment with Ian O'Connor, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And that will do it. Second time.
And there you go. Mike Tirico did a wonderful call. Chris Collinsworth on color. Not much of a game. It's not Seattle's fault. They came to play, and I think they just overmatched New England, whose defense looked great. The offense was anemic, but Ian O'Connor's the expert. He's been writing for years, best-selling author multiple times, six times in all. His latest book about Aaron Rodgers, part of that, wrote about Belichick. Ian O'Connor, welcome back as we welcome you in on Zoom. Were you actually covering the game this year?
Was not. I've done a lot of Super Bowls in my career, but not this one. Obviously, I was on call last night in case I had to jump into action from afar. But it was a bad game, no question about it. Listen, I grew up, there were a lot of Super Bowls that were non-competitive, and this one was close to that. I just think the better team won. They were more physical, Seattle was. And I did not like New England's game plan. Obviously, everything in hindsight is easy to call, but I didn't understand against that defense what Josh McDaniels, who's probably the best offensive coordinator of his generation, really was trying to accomplish there, because didn't put New England in its best position to win.
Do you think Drake May was hurt?
He was banged up without question. But you could say that, Brian, about everybody on the field at this point of the season. And it looked to me like he was good enough to play a good game. He just didn't do it. And I think the offensive line really let him down, particularly his left tackle. And I just thought against that defense, the amount of pressure Seattle was generating, that why didn't they go to a quicker offensive game, screen passes, design draws for Drake May himself, turn him into a running back? Because in the Super Bowl, Brian, you're no longer worried about your quarterback getting hurt. You just put everything out there. And I just thought he could have run more on designed delayed draws and screen passes, quick passes to the receivers. And it just didn't seem like they had that as a big part of their game plan, and they paid the price for it.
Yeah, here's Drake May on losing the Super Bowl. Cut eight.
It's hurt. No doubt. It definitely hurts. It's been a long ride. They played better than us tonight. They deserve to win that game. And, speaking for the whole team and myself, just what a journey it's been for us. I love this team, love those guys in the locker room, and we'll leave it all on the field. And I know a lot of guys do that tonight, and just came up short, didn't play our best, and that's what happens.
He's 23. He's going to be back. He'll be back in contention, and the team has proven they're going to be in contention. I don't know if they're going back to Super Bowl again, where I'm pretty convinced Seattle is only going to get better. Sam Darnold is the great story. Tell everybody in the Sam Darnold you knew when got drafted in the New York area. What happened? What happened in Carolina? How did he begin to rehab in San Francisco, shine in Minnesota, and then win the Super Bowl in Seattle?
Went back to a column I wrote years ago. Obviously, his rookie year, he loses a tough home opener to Miami. And I wrote, you could see physically he's going to be a star. He had all the physical skill. He had mobility. He had the arm, escapability.
He's huge.
And yeah, he's a big guy and just had everything you need to be a successful quarterback. The Jets did not surround him with enough talent, didn't have the right people to develop him. So that starts this journey. I mean, right after his first year, you have a new general manager and a new head coach in New York. And that's a bad start. And so after a few seasons, he ends up in Carolina. He bounces around the league to his fifth team. Now, you look at last year, Brian, the decision by Minnesota after winning 14 games with Sam Darnold moving on because he struggled at the end of the season in the playoff game that they lost. But still, he went 14-3, and they decided to go with J.J. McCarthy, and that turned out to be a disastrous decision. Obviously, Seattle is the beneficiary of that. But what a story of resilience to end up on your fifth team before you win the Super Bowl. The first guy to do that as a quarterback is really an amazing feat and just speaks to his strength of character and really the talent that he always possessed.
You know, the thing is, when he went to back up Brock Purdy, going into these systems like San Francisco in the old days, in the 80s and 90s, you go there, you just got better. You know, the people you surround you with and the coaching staff that Bill Walsh had and Seifert after that. There's something about that stay that seemed to have gotten better. He was clearly the backup quarterback. When he had to step up, he didn't look good. But do you think that Shanahan, the coach of the 49ers, deserves credit for that?
He deserves some credit, certainly. I think Sam Darnold deserves most of the credit himself. But I think Shanahan, if you go there as a quarterback, you are going to get better. He was talking on the pregame about how maybe the one thing he saw in Darnold that needed to be corrected was you don't need to try to win every single play all the time and live sometimes to see another down. But Kyle Shanahan makes quarterbacks better without question, but Sam Darnold deserves the lion's share of the credit just for hanging in there five teams. And really the confidence hit he took when you go 14-3 for a team and they decide to let you go to overcome that right away and win a Super Bowl is really a stunning story. It really is.
So Clint Kubiak will be the next coach of the Raiders, whose dad obviously was extremely, and he won a Super Bowl, didn't he, Kubiak, with Denver as head coach?
He did not, but I think that's, he's a guy now who has a great opportunity to go to Las Vegas and have a chance to become a quarterback under, a coach under Tom Brady, who really is filling very small shoes. And I think that's important. A lot of times you have coaches who go into situations where they're following a tough act. In this case, he's not. And so that's a great opportunity for Kubiak.
Yeah, so here he is talking about Sam Darnold. And Clint Kubiak gets a lot of credit for being the offense coordinator on Seattle and doing a lot of the coaching, cut six.
I've said it a million times, a million different ways, but I think if you really think about what he's overcome, you just got to have so much respect for him, and because this league will beat you down. It'll beat you down as a coach, as a player, and you have to really love what you're doing and love the people you're doing it with to keep going. And that's the kind of joy he brought to our building is he just the love of the game. He's a competitor, and it's been a real honor to coach him.
So he feels this guy got to go there. He's got to rebuild the whole thing, but he's going to have a quarterback in Mendoza to build that team around. That seems to be a good start, Ian.
Yeah, it really is. And I think Mendoza, it's interesting. Unfortunately for the Jets, they have the second pick in the draft, and it's a one quarterback draft. It sort of seems that way anyway. But you look at Gary Kubiak, obviously had Peyton Manning, and at the end of his career, winning that Super Bowl with a quarterback who, I don't want to say Peyton was barely functioning at that point, but he was not the reason, of course, that they won that second ring for Peyton. It was really the defense and other parts around him. And I think Mendoza's the kind of talent to start with a young quarterback like that, who really, look what he proved in college. He took the losingest Division I team ever and made it a champion. One of the great stories really in the history of American sports. And so it's just a great piece to start your career, to build around him and have a chance to have a long-term partnership that really can be successful in the AFC side of the draw.
All right, so that game's done. It was not much of a game, but Seattle deserves all the credit. Got it. Understand. So let's talk about some of the other smaller stories. Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft do not get into the Hall of Fame. Tony Dungy was really called out by one of his colleagues saying, you were part of the voting committee. How could he not be in it? And they blamed Tony Dungy, who's one of the great people you'll ever meet, period, football or out of football, said, I blame the system. They could only allow us to put a certain amount of people in. in and he put Drew Brees and some other players in. Your thoughts about Bill Belichick not being in or people being resentful because he wasn't the most personable guy around?
And listen, the system is out of whack and it needs to be changed. I think the Hall of Fame will change it, where you have senior players competing against coaches and contributors like Robert Kraft and obviously Belichick. And you can only vote for three of those five candidates. And so that does need to change. But at the end of the day, there were 20 candidates in all. When you include the modern era players and the people I just mentioned, Bill Belichick was the best of those 20. So he had to go in regardless of the system. He had to be one of your three picks in that category, and then you go from there, and that didn't happen. So I think Rodney Harrison was right. I'm not sure that Tony Dungy appreciated that exchange taking place, right, on national TV. But the criticism there was fair, and I think without question the Hall of Fame will now change its voting system and allow more people to be voted on, candidates, instead of three out of five, five out of five, or at least break that category up and have coaches and contributors separate from the senior players.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens. Now, what do you make of his girlfriend wearing a T-shirt of Robert Kraft's controversial situation that happened a few years ago? I'm not going to glorify it by going back. I like Robert Kraft too much. But for this 24-year-old to stand next to Bill Belichick wearing an anti-Kraft T-shirt, I mean, come on, Ian O'Connor. That is totally unacceptable with a woman. That is totally unacceptable.
Well, that surprised me, right? Because at times you've seen Belichick and Kraft try to publicly suggest that they still have a pretty good relationship. And I think that was certainly uncalled for. I guess some people thought it was funny. And certainly Robert Kraft was not one of them. But it does speak to the truth, really, about their divorce in New England, what they feel about each other, what they felt about each other at the time. And should that T-shirt be worn? No, it shouldn't. It was. And so I don't want to hear anything going forward about how Belichick and Kraft actually do have a decent relationship. To me, that proves it. I don't know. They both didn't get into the Hall of Fame. Does Bill believe that Kraft had something to do with him not getting in? I would still just put that on the voters. They had an opportunity to make Bill Belichick a first ballot Hall of Famer, and they didn't do it. Kraft was not a voter. But that just speaks to the true nature of their relationship. So going forward, I don't want to hear that they actually do like each other or still have a pretty good relationship, because that proves obviously the opposite point.
When you were doing your book on Belichick, did they try to sell you on that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the Patriots tried to sell you on that in the final years of really even the Brady run. And that Brady and Belichick had a pretty good relationship. And really, it was Kraft and Brady versus Belichick at the end. That's the way it played out in those final years in New England. And there were a lot of people in the building who wanted Belichick to re-sign Brady to sort of, for the first time, bow and say, hey, you know, we need you to stay here and maybe kiss his ring a little bit. And Belichick wouldn't do that. So I think that, there were people inside the organization who would speak the truth on that relationship off the record. On the record, there was a lot of, hey, this partnership is a lot more harmonious than is being portrayed. And I don't think that was the case.
Hey, Ian, you're the one with all the knowledge. But from what I remember, he had the Falcons job. And Arthur Blank picked up the phone and talked to Kraft and said, what do you think? Or vice versa. At which time Kraft basically said, he doesn't talk to you. He's going to do his own thing. You're going to really have no say. And Arthur Blank went elsewhere. And people were shocked that he didn't get a job that year, but I thought that the Falcons had the best shot. What's the reality?
I think that there's some truth to that, but I would think at the end of the day, Arthur Blank is the one who made that decision. And if you're not going to hire Bill Belichick, I think there were people inside his organization who said, hey, when Belichick comes in, yeah, he's saying the right things right now, but he's ultimately going to bring all of his people into the building and take over, which probably is true, by the way. And that would cost some of those people their jobs with the Falcons. So Blank took a pass. And listen, the way things have worked out in North Carolina so far, maybe not the worst decision in the world, but it is hard to believe that Belichick wouldn't get a job after winning six Super Bowls and going to nine in New England. I mean, somebody should have hired him. And the Jets wouldn't even take a meeting with him, which to me was crazy, because if nothing else, if you sit with Bill Belichick, you're going to learn a lot about the AFC East and institutional knowledge that he's acquired over time and dominating your franchise. But the Jets did not even take that meeting, which was a pretty stunning turn of events.
You mean in the offseason? You mean before Aaron Glenn?
Belichick called the Jets and wanted to sit down and talk about the job, and the Jets decided not to do it. And
what year was that? I did not know that, Ian. What year was that?
Yeah, this is before they made their most recent coaching hire with Aaron Glenn. Yeah, he wanted to talk to the Jets, and they didn't take the meeting.
Ian, I don't blame them. He embarrassed that organization when he took the job and resigned from the job with a note. I mean, I don't blame them. Even though those guys are gone now and the owner's different.
That was 100 years ago. Who cares now? It's just,
I'm not over it.
The guy, he died. Well, you know, maybe you should be at this point, but he dominated your franchise. He shouldn't have walked out the way he did. But it was just a long time ago. So many different people now in place. And so I would have at least taken the meeting just to see what he had to say and what he had to say about your roster and the way you you run your organization. And if nothing else, you learn a lot in that meeting. But the Jets decided not to go that route, and look how it played out, right?
So they're nowhere right now.
If Aaron Glenn in year two can be a somewhat effective head coach is doubtful at this point. He's shown nothing to suggest that, and the Jets don't have a quarterback either. So when you don't have a head coach and you don't have a quarterback, you're nowhere in the NFL.
You might have a good offensive coordinator in Frank Reich, right?
Yeah, I think that actually was a good hire, his experience, and he knows Aaron Glenn, and so, but they need a quarterback, and it looks like they're not going to get one this year. Now, they'll probably get a bridge quarterback the next draft. Are they going to be in play for Arch Manning? You know, who knows? Just how bad will the Jets be? It really would behoove them to lose a lot of games this year to be in place next year in the draft to get a franchise quarterback of that ilk. But I think that right now, you're looking at another tough season for the Jets. Aaron Glenn probably won't survive unless they win at least, I would say, 7 games. So he's got to find a way to get to that number or else he's done after 2 years.
Ian O'Connor, you're never done. You're always working. Ian O'Connor of The Athletic, thanks so much, Ian. Great to see you. Appreciate your insight.
My pleasure, Brian, as always.
You got it. Back in a moment.
Where big stories meet bigger conversations. Stay informed and energized with the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
I thought it was terrible. I mean, he's won so much, won so many Super Bowls. Great coach. Became a little bit controversial, I guess, after that. This little period after that. During it, he was just a great coach. I thought it was very inappropriate.
You think he deserves it, the Hall of Fame?
Oh, yeah. It's like, what have you done for me lately? Well, you know, you have a great career, and he has had a little bit of a controversial year and a half, 2 years, maybe. But what difference does that make? No, he should be in there right at the top.
See, number one, first I'm going to comment on NBC. They just did a good interview. He asked tough questions, but he let him finish, but he still had to know that sometimes Trump talks in a circle, so you jump in politely. That's all he wants. You don't have to kiss his butt. All you have to do is be fair, and those questions are fair. Give him that, and then come back and say, what did you learn from what happened in Minneapolis? He will answer it. But if you are saying your approval rating is 36%. The Republicans are this, and you've did this tweet, and everything's negative. Then you ask, what have you learned from Minneapolis? His back is up. He's not gonna give you anything. You know who also understands how to do that? Kristen Welker. Never met her, but he gives her interviews because I think she's fair with him. She's not easy. Easy doesn't work either for Trump. It does for Trump. I mean. He thinks it works, but it doesn't. But when you ask direct questions, you have a follow-up logically to what the person answers. That's all he wants. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. All I want to see you in person. We're almost sold out in Fort Myers. And then May 30th, I want to see you in Reno, Nevada. And don't forget Evansville, Indiana in July. BrianKilmeade.com.